I'm wrestling, not weak for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everybody? You are listening to episode number 76 of the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defense Soap, Defend What You've Built, and Dahlemer Mats. Tommy, you're actually on you're always on vacation, as our listeners know, but you're on vacation again this week, right? Don't you go on vacation like 7 weeks a year?
I'm always on vacation. I have 3 weeks of freaking vacation, and yeah, I go on vacation 3 weeks a year. I just maximize my time. I think that's why it seems like I'm gone a lot.
Okay.
When I go on vacation, you know, I do it up.
There we go. And just so you know, we can be clear with our listeners, Tommy, there has been some rumors going around that maybe your Midlands training isn't going so well and you're having second thoughts. What do you got for us there?
It broke up. A second thoughts about what, my man?
I said, I heard you're having second thoughts about your Midlands training. And possibly not competing in that. What do we got to tell our listeners?
You know, I mean, it's, you know, the desire needs to outweigh the obstacle. As we all know, that's sure. That's what happens when people accomplish great things. And the obstacle seems to exceed the desire right now, Ben. And I'm just, you know, I'm not one to step into something if I'm not all in. So I'm going to need some motivating tweets from our listeners to get me to do this, man, because I don't think it's just so hard to train when I'm working and traveling as much as I do. You know what
sure.
I mean?
Well, that's Tommy. That's why I think you gotta you know, learn to ride a new bicycle. If you just learn to pin these big guys, you don't really got to wrestle that hard.
I know. Gosh, if I could just pin them in 30 seconds, it
Seriously.
Would be easy.
All we need to do is make the semis. You get some semi points and you default out, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd like to think that if I was ahead going into the third period, that my pride would take me the last 2 minutes.
I think so.
So it's really like I've got to beat these guys in a 5 minute go. That's the way I look at it.
that's funny. Wow, that's good.
Oh.
All right, so let's get to our – I don't want to talk about Bellator, but let's get to our first topic. And this is something that's been kind of bugging me for a while, Tommy, on a lot of different fronts. And it's the Boise State situation. And I think I'm going to take a different angle than most wrestling people take, which we've done that before on this show.
No doubt.
And that is that everyone's irate that Boise State is cutting wrestling, right?
And Keith Fowler is a professional golfer when it comes.
You watching Ricky Fowler, bro? Tommy, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, dude. I don't know what happened there. Oh. My computer just started. Yeah, my bad.
Okay, all good. So with this Boise State situation, yeah, I don't like that they're cutting it, right? But it's almost gotten to the point in my mind where it's like we feel like we have the right for colleges to have wrestling programs when almost every college program in the nation loses money and loses a lot of money. And most college coaches are doing absolutely nothing to change that, right? And so as we move forward, almost all state universities across the country are at a negative right now, right? They're losing money. And so obviously stuff has to get cut, right? Budgets have to be balanced. And so if wrestling can make itself more attractive in more places, it's less likely to get cut. And that's what these college coaches got to be spending – a lot more effort doing is making their programs maybe not profitable, maybe that's a stretch, right? But at least a lot closer to that number as opposed to making no effort for it at all.
Well, I think that, you know, in this conversation, could I take up the whole episode? And maybe it should not tonight, but another night.
Well,
but,
we can do what we want. So if we want to go the whole episode, we can go the whole episode.
Here's the thing, and this is the nature of the beast, in my opinion, in college athletics. We just can't beat the slowest gazelle.
Yeah, there you go.
When times get tough, the slowest gazelle is going to get eaten. So we can't be losing the most money, and we can't have the worst public persona. We can't have the worst grades. Like, all of these metrics that are measured against other sports, we can't be at the bottom of the barrel. And so, because if we weren't the slowest gazelle, we wouldn't be as easy of a target when these guys come into a financial crunch or proportionality ratio problem, whatever it is that motivates these athletic directors to drop the sports, because it's not like they want to. It's not like they wake up saying, yeah, I want to drop wrestling. They feel compelled to. They feel like they have to. Now, sometimes I question the motives. You know, sometimes it's just – sometimes, Ben, it really is simple as, well, this donor really likes baseball.
Yeah,
100%. And he's never even been to a wrestling match. So we're going to drop wrestling. So that's part of it. That's not all of it.
But that's colleges get on. I mean, look right at your hometown. Tom Ryan went out and fundraised his ass off, and he's building a whole new wrestling room for himself. So to think that's not part of the equation is insane. And that's why I think a lot of wrestling people, I almost feel like they think it's their right for these colleges to have wrestling programs. When we should not think of it as a right, but instead we should think of it as a privilege, something we're privileged enough to have. We're privileged to have 77 college programs. And if we prove ourselves and if we do the right things, we could probably have more, right? But it shouldn't be an expectation.
Correct. I'm with you. I could not agree with you more. And then just speaking to Tom Ryan, you know, one of the reasons why there's just – Ohio State's almost a bad example. It's a moot point because it would never get dropped even if you had the worst coach in the face of the world. But – one of the reasons why wrestling is so solvent at Ohio State right now, one of the major reasons, is that Tom Ryan indirectly plays a major role in university fundraising outside of the sport of wrestling.
Really?
And I know that – oh, yeah. I mean, I it's just not my details and stuff like that, but he has – like any leader, like any consummate, passionate person about the university part of, he's just stumbled into so many friendships that are non-wrestling related, but he's played an integral role in those in key contributors to the university. So our athletic department is Tom Ryan and the wrestling program as a revenue stream for them, not with ticket sales, but because of the relationships that are forged. Because of the fundraising they can conduct at a wrestling match, because of the speeches that Tom Ryan can give, because of the people that he knows, these people are contributing to the university outside of the sport. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to be liked, and there's a lot of ways to be valued within the university system. And I just, you know, I'm kind of long-winded here, but I completely agree with you that I don't think that people feel privileged, feel like we have a right to walk out and sport that everyone's extremely unfamiliar with, and like we have a right to have that sport sort of ever. I don't think it's a right. I feel the same way you do.
All right, Tommy, we lost you a little bit there, but I think you and I, unfortunately, we're always on the same page. I wish we disagreed a slightly more often. That it is a privilege for us to have Division I college wrestling everywhere, and we need to do our job to further that by, you know, that's Coach Lee said, Tom Ryan getting hustling the donations, and I know Brian Smith does the same thing. I donate to him. And then obviously putting butts in stands, right? That's a big deal. And I loved your analogy.
No doubt.
Being the not the slowest gazelle. that really is a great analogy, because when times are tough, something is getting cut. So it's a really good analogy for that.
I mean, it's just the way it is. And we don't need to grand stage the issue here. We don't need to compete with football. We just need to be not the slowest gazelle.
100%. So let's get on to You know, we are a wrestling show, but we're going to talk about this Bellator MMA event because it had so many wrestlers on it. And then I think, obviously, it brings up the interesting dynamic that Aaron Pico fought. You know, if he was still wrestling, obviously he's been 6-0 against Zane Rutherford, so he would be – there's a likelihood that he would be our representatives at the World Championships right now, and he's only 20 years old, so it's kind of
right.
– he left before his time. So we need to talk about that dynamic also. So I will you know, we got to see two All-American wrestlers, Phil Davis and Ryan Bader, fought, and there was almost no wrestling in it. And – man, I don't know, Tommy, the New York crowd was freaking brutal, but they booed these guys. Can you believe that?
They, you know, wrestlers are the most likely to get booed in MMA because the style that we can apply is usually, you know, the most boring. But to your point, I mean, and full disclosure, I know that it was on Spike. I didn't watch. I read a lot about it, but I guess it was kind of a snooze fest, but not much wrestling.
Well, here's the thing. They didn't wrestle at all, but I didn't think it was a terrible fight. Maybe it was just that I liked both the guys and I was interested in the fight, but, you know, it wasn't the best fight, but I didn't think it was that bad. Who knows, maybe I guess I had a different perspective than most
right.
people. But, yeah, it was booed, but, you know, and I think this fight specifically shows an interesting dynamic that that wrestling transition to MMA, right? Because we all know how to wrestle, but some people use wrestling better than MMA, and I thought this was fascinating because if you think about both of these guys, obviously Phil would have the slight advantage in wrestling accolades as he was a national champ and Bader was only an All-American. But Bader's kind of a more powerful, blow-through-you type of wrestler, right? And if you remember, Phil Davis was a great mat wrestler, good in scrambles. And so, you know,
correct.
One thing I saw here is that Phil never tried I guess a second effort. So he would, you know, Bader would stuff the shot, and then Phil wouldn't go to that next level, that body lock or reshot or whatever it is. And Bader was timing his blow through doubles perfectly and blowing through Phil. So I thought it was and maybe I'm nerding out here a little bit, but I thought it was a great textbook example of how wrestling can and should be used by Bader and how maybe wrestling fails by Phil Davis in MMA.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and kind of backtrack here a little bit, but we're in our 76th episode. You're one of the best welterweights in the world in the sport of mixed martial arts, and we don't talk about MMA that often, so I think it's okay to kind of blow an episode on
sure.
this sport and all the things associated with it. And, you know, like I said, I didn't watch the Bader fight, but I've been hired by Frank Mir, Czech Congo, Brock Lesnar, and Michael Bisping, and a few others in when I was training to help these guys with MMA. So I've been around the sport a little bit, and the reason I've been around the sport is to help facilitate people who are trying to either resist, you know, a wrestling base or yeah. get more familiar with it or whatever. And I will say enough about MMA firsthand to know that wrestling MMA is a lot different than wrestling itself.
Wait.
You know, and I think that, you know, and it's kind of weird that I'm talking to you about this because I think that people that as actual wrestlers were really good at blowing through positions
mm-hmm.
and not having, you know, like a 17-second evolving takedown have been able to transcend into MMA better than others.
Yeah, it's definitely easy.
And Bader example. Yeah, so in your Phil Davis and Bader example kind of supports that claim. But I'm talking to you, Ben, and you've done an excellent job in MMA, and you weren't exactly a guy that went out and hit, you know, split-second takedowns. So
yeah.
I'm interested in what you have to say about everything that I just said.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I still don't blow through people on any type of shots, right? And so that's where I was saying,
right.
you know, in MMA, when a guy does know how to wrestle, you might be able to hit that shot and finish easily, right? But obviously Ryan Bader knows what he's doing wrestling-wise,
right.
and that's where – Phil was just trying these one shot, you know, he's trying one shot. And that's where you got to kind of get creative and you got to get tricky about how you can do your wrestling. Because I think if Phil Davis and Ryan Bader get in a scramble, Phil Davis ends on top of the scramble, right? But Phil Davis still has to be able to create the scramble in order to end up on top. And that's what he wasn't able to do. And that's
right.
What, you know, you saw Bader stay in great position and then you know, at times uses offensive wrestling very effectively. So I thought that was a really – and so this is maybe this is me just nerding out. Maybe it was as boring as everyone else thought it was. But I thought it was a very interesting expose, if you will, on how to use wrestling in MMA. But am I being a nerd, Tommy? Is that me?
I love it.
Is that me being a nerd?
I love it, yeah, but we need a little bit of this. You know, 76 episodes, you know, we probably spent – collectively 15 or 20 minutes over the first 75 episodes talking about MMA. So
yeah, not
it's
a
all
lot.
Good, man. I'm happy about it.
Okay. And then, so let's skip over Pico. Cause I think that's going to be the biggest talking point. So let's skip over him for a second. And let's go to Mr. Chael Sonnen. Chael uses some beautiful takedowns, gets on top, beats him up, beats up Vanderlei Silva. That is, but obviously these guys are both way past their prime.
Right.
What I mean, how do you feel about that? Because I have mixed feelings about these guys fighting way past their prime. Obviously, people are still interested to see them. That's why they're on the top of the card. How do you feel about these guys fighting so far past their primes?
Well, I think business-wise, for them personally, as well as Bellator, it all matches up. It makes a lot of sense. And I think that, you know, I'll just kind of leave it at that, man. I mean, I love Chael Sonnen. He's, you know, if he's past his prime, then I'm way, 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 way past
You're
my prime.
You're younger than Chael?
But I think that – I know that, but he's a lot better off physically than I am right now.
Well, he's got to put some miles on the road, Tommy.
But, you know, I don't know, man. I think it makes sense. I mean, I think it makes business sense for the promotion. I think it makes business sense for Chael. I think it makes business sense for Vanderlei. But, you know, by the same token, it's probably not two guys top 10 in the world right now, you know, slugging it out. And their best years are behind them. So I guess I have mixed feelings. Sorry to be a fence rider there. But, you know, business-wise, I can't disagree at all with it.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the funny thing about, obviously, the funny thing about it is in wrestling, you see almost nobody go past their prime because there's that money in it, right? So you literally, I mean, can you name someone in wrestling that has continued to compete significantly past their prime? I mean, I was thinking about it. I couldn't really think of one.
Not anybody that was once, you know, a significantly high-level guy. You know, every now and again, you know, and I won't name names, but you get these journeymen that were never knocking on the door to be on a world team or Olympic team, and for some reason they just wrestle until their legs fall off. You know what I mean? And you see that every now and again, but you don't see a guy that made a world team or made an Olympic team overstay his welcome much more than 1 year. You know, it's like, that dude has 1 year of just significant underperformance, he's out. And it's an easy decision because money's not driving your motivation to be in the sport to begin with.
Yep.
So
exactly. If
you know your best years are behind you and the best success that you can have in the sport is behind you, then why would you continue?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you see in wrestling. So it is kind of funny to me in MMA when you see guys that are so far past their prime, and they're still competing, and obviously they're still interesting to people because people are watching them, right? So I really have mixed feelings because I think, like, I don't want to go down that road personally, but I obviously see why people would do it, right? That makes sense.
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course. And so you see people do that in business a lot, right? Like they are sitting in a great high-ranking position within the company, and you know, they're going to have to be, you're going to have to pull them from the desk to get them to either move on or retire. And the reason being is because it's like, you know, I'm making a lot of money.
Yeah.
Why, you know, I'm going to have to, somebody's going to have to tell me to leave. I'm not going to volunteer to leave this. You know what I mean? So
yeah, 100%.
It's same type of thing. Hey, what'd you think of Chael's, kind of,
his post-fight thing?
Making the comment about G Wiz. I mean, first of all, do you think anybody in Madison Square Garden knew what he was talking about besides maybe you and David Taylor?
Well, he claimed it was a mic malfunction. Well, Nick Gwizdowski was in the arena, P.S. I saw him after the fights. But he said it was a microphone malfunction. I thought he mispronounced it. I'm not sure where the truth is there. But no, because I was like,
let me tell you, what? Ben, he's full of it. It was, dude, that was not a microphone malfunction.
That's what he claims.
He did not say his name.
That's what he claims.
No, no way. I don't buy it for a second. I don't buy it for a second.
Really? Wow. Okay,
no,
he botched it. Okay, so he butchers the name. You know, he's tired. You get it, right? He's tired. It happens.
It's all good. Yeah,
Like, what did he just say about someone being a world champion? Like, I'm like, I missed it. But then he said, but goddamn, I hate New York. And I died, right? Because it's all New Yorkers in the stands. I was freaking dying because I loved it. And everyone else is obviously giving it, you know, mean mugging him. So, no, that takes me big balls to do that.
God damn, I hate New York.
It was such a great line. He said, except... Great. And then, you know, I watched that. Except for soon-to-be world champion Nick Gwostowski, all I can think is, God damn, I hate New York. and then he lied about Tito. He said, yeah, I just beat up Vanderlei and I tapped Tito in a minute, which was freaking hilarious because Tito was in there and he had this look on his face and then everyone started chanting, F you, Tito. it was hilarious.
Hey, I saw that. Chael a few weeks ago tweeted that Vanderlei is the only guy in the world that has cauliflower face. I thought that was really funny too.
Now, dude, I'm not shitting you. A couple of kids from my academy, they were at the national team training camp this week, and they're now claiming they have cauliflower face. So I think they maybe got the idea from Chael that it is in fact possible that cauliflower. But I don't think it is, Tommy. I think maybe you could possibly get cauliflower nose, which I think I might have a little bit on the tip there. But there's no other part of your face that's cartilage, so I don't know that it's possible to get cartilage face, right? Is that fake news? You doctor?
I don't think there's really is cauliflower face. I just think that Vanderlei looks like a guy that, you know, if you had to pick a guy that has cauliflower face, it kind of looks like he's got a little cauliflower going on there.
That's good. All right, so let's get to this Pico thing, because I think we can attack this from many different angles.
We should devote 1 minute to every second that was fought.
Oh, that's fucking... I dropped the F-bomb. Hey, Jake, take the F-bomb out. Tommy, that is brutal. I mean,
come on,
wow.
Man.
Brutal. I don't know. Where do you want to go with it? You there? Tommy. Oh.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, I was letting you lead. I asked where you wanted to go with it before I took off. The Pico thing.
Oh, I didn't see. I mean, there's so many ways to look at this, but, you know, the reality is he's a young kid. What is he, 20, 21 right
he's
now?
He's 20, I believe.
Yeah, he's 20 years old. He was an Olympic alternate last year, got complete reconstruction on his knee. He goes into MMA. This has been his plan all along. You know, for him to come back in that setting in Madison Square Garden, you know, I don't think it has any impact on what he's going to do in the sport of mixed martial arts and or wrestling. You know, it just, he got beat, man. I mean, he got headlocked and pinned. What else are you going to say? I mean, I don't think it's anything.
Headlocked and pinned. I love that you went there, Tommy. I love that you went there. He has got headlocked and pinned.
Headlocked and pinned, in my opinion.
That is funny.
Do you believe that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a wrestling analogy, of course, right? He got caught. And I hear a lot of people, obviously hindsight is 20/20, right? Because I don't know if you don't do betting, I don't believe. But the betting lines on Pico are -1100, which is, that's freaking gigantic, right? And he asked for this matchup. I know he asked for it. He said he asked for it. He didn't want to fight an easy person. And so everyone's now saying they should have never given him something like that. They should have never given him something like that. But that's BS, because before the fight, everyone thought he was going to run through him, right? And so I say, if he wants that tough of a fight,
right,
why not give it to him, right? I mean, do you agree with that, or do you think they should have given him an easy fight?
No, I thought it was fine. I mean, I don't know what it does to the Bellator brand and the marketing strategy around Aaron Pico, so on and so forth. But to me, it's like, you know, and you've probably come back from some tough injuries, Ben. I mean, just it's a long road to hoe.
Sure.
And I'm sure it didn't go the way that anybody thought it was going to go. But, again, you know, and this is what Lou Rizzelli used to always tell me this when he coached me when I was out of college. And it's just great advice. He's like, hey, when you win, you're not as good as you really think you are when you win. And when you lose, you're not as bad as you think you are when you lose. He goes, you know, if you lose, you still got the same problems. If you win, you still got the same problems. It's just a process. And so when I watched this 20-year-old guy get knocked out in Madison Square Garden, it's like, you know what, man, take 4 or 5 days off or whatever it takes to heal up. Get back to training. You still need to recover your knee mentally, physically. Everything still hasn't come full circle. You know, he's going to be fine, in my opinion. So I felt bad for him, honestly, and tough loss. But I will say this, Ben. The dude that beat him, I listened to like one or two of his interviews.
Yeah.
He's an impressive guy.
Yeah.
He almost sounds like a wrestler, to be quite honest.
Well, wrestling people have successful mentality, so that's, you know, definitely a possibility. Yeah, so I thought, like I said, I thought that's fine. He wants a tough fight, give him a tough fight, no big deal. You know, and MMA is not a lot about records. I mean, if we look at our main eventers, Chael Sonnen and Vanderlei, they both have over 10 losses. So taking L's in MMA is not like in boxing, or it's not like in wrestling, right? It's just not. And so takes a loss, you know, obviously not ideal. You'd like him to kind of run through division, I think is what Bellator wanted to happen. But that wasn't what happened. So what do you think? And I guess I didn't realize it. I don't know Pico. I'm not his coach. I'm not his friend. Just kind of been watching him afar. But I was really excited for his debut. But there's been a lot of negative backlash from him leaving and a lot of wrestling people being kind of salty about it. And I don't know, what do you view on that? Because I think for me, and you, I don't know, we kind of get along too much. I think you're going to say that. I think it's his life. If that's what he wants to do, he's got to go do it. And if kind of going back to the Division I conversation we had slightly earlier, if we really want wrestlers to stick around, it's not our right to keep the best young athletes, right? We need to provide them financial incentive in order to stay.
Right.
So you know, that's kind of what I don't blame him at all. And obviously I waited a little longer, but I did the same exact thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hold it against Aaron Pico for going into mixed martial arts in the slightest. I also think that the loss, and we're kind of going in circles agreeing with each other, but the loss to me is not indicative of the fact that he made a good or a bad move by transitioning into the sport. I mean, he made a decision. If he would have knocked a guy out in 24 seconds, I wouldn't be saying he made a great move by going to MMA. I mean, the process, it's going to take time for this process to unfold to prove that it was, you know, quote unquote, the right call for him. But at the end of the day, he made a decision for himself. He's always been a dignified member of the sport of wrestling. He's always been well-liked, and I think that we should be cheering him on as opposed to resenting the fact that he left the sport so early.
Yeah, definitely. Well, damn it, Tommy, we would have more conversation about that if we didn't agree so much, because on my MMA podcast we're talking about this, and both of them were against me that there's no way that Bellator should allow him to have an opponent so good right away. And I said, you know, obviously, hey, if he wanted.
Well, I think that those guys, I think that, you know, well, I think the problem with not the problem, but the difference is that, you know, I think we're looking at a 20-year-old kid. We're looking at, you know, the fact that he left, you know, basically, you know, it was his weight class to lose in wrestling. And he left that to go in MMA. So we're looking at this MMA deal as kind of a journey, because we know what he gave up, and he obviously didn't give it up for one fight in Madison Square Gardens, and I don't think that anything that happened the other night really impacts his career. I also, you know, I think we also just kind of know he's a scrapper, he's a fighter, and
yeah,
he's going to be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So the other unfortunate events, though, I was kind of
do you think he'll ever come? Here's
no, he ain't never
coming
back.
He'll ever come back to wrestling?
No, hell no.
And why do you think that?
Because he's going to be good and he's going to start making some money. And then why would you come back, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So he'll never just, you know, take 15 months off of MMA and try out for the team in
2020? Nah, no. I don't think he'd be, you know, after that much time off, you lose your timing, right? I came back and wrestled some matches after I retired in 2008. It just, I was never the same. I never, it would have taken me significantly more time to reach the peak.
Yeah, there is that half second, split second deal where it's just, it's a different ball game.
At that level, it's a split
second. And here
second.
You are trying to get me to go to the Midlands.
Well, but that's not the World Team Trials, Tommy. I mean, the World Team Trials is all NCAA champions. The Midlands probably only has a couple. You could beat a few guys up early. Duh. Right? Then last but not least, what are you laughing about? Hello?
Yeah, but it would be so embarrassing to just be out the third period losing by three and I can't move. Like, it's just, I'm not signing up for that.
You could do the old whirly bird. Okay, Tommy, so the last thing I want to talk about, which is an unfortunate one, and I don't know if you saw the meme where they pulled out the stool, but Michael Chandler, old Missouri teammate, unfortunately, he got kicked in the leg, somehow, I don't know, rolled his ankle. I don't think he broke it. I think that came out. They rolled his ankle, hurt it, and, so he lost the fight. I guess technically it was by TKO, but the ref blew it because the ref called a timeout, which obviously you're not allowed to do. Brought the doctors in, again, which you're, again, not allowed to do, unless there's a foul, right, like an eye poke or a nut shot.
Right,
And then the doctors waved off the fight. So that was a really, that went back-to-back with Pico. So at that point, I was, I was super impressed.
So is he going to get an automatic rematch or whatever it might be, or is he going to have to come up through the gamut?
No, it sounds like he's going to get an automatic rematch. Against the opponent, Brent Primus. So, you know, who knows, that might actually give him a little more hype for the next fight that's coming up here. So overall, it was an interesting card. A lot of wrestlers on it.
Tell me about the vibe in MSG for a Bellator fight.
It was good. You know, it wasn't sold out. It wasn't right. Sold out, but it was 80, 85, 90% full. It was very full. There's a lot of wrestlers on the card. I think wrestlers were the stars of the card. And, there's a good vibe for it. You could tell the town, the city was excited about it, kind of everywhere you were around. And, it was interesting because my first Bellator was Bellator 13. And it was in the Chicago Theater, and there was probably 300 people in the audience. And, you know, I fought in a handful of small venues. So it was really funny. You know, having watched, that was what, 8 years ago? No, 2010, 7 years ago. It was really funny, watched it grow from what it was now into what it is, which it's a big freaking deal right now. So it was cool to see that change. It was my first.
So Ben.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can talk much about this, but you left Bellator for another promotion. You've basically been in MMA where you've watched, you know, the UFC become what it is, then get acquired. Bellator starts up. You're there for the startup phase. They're owned by Viacom or partnered with Viacom or something along those lines. You are obviously fighting for, I think, the number one promotion in Asia where combat sports is heralded. You know, just tell us about the landscape with all the promotions. What's going on with that? I mean, Bellator is the number two promotion in mixed martial arts domestically. They damn near fill up MSG. They're on Spike. They're owned by Viacom. I mean, what's going on? I mean, are they gaining market share on the UFC, or are they an acquisition target for the UFC, or
no,
do they want to compete and take down the UFC?
Yeah, like, I think they want to compete. You know, honestly, my opinion of the situation is that they're obviously not an acquisition target, right? Because they're owned by Viacom. Viacom is obviously significantly larger than the UFC and their ownership. It's obvious competition. And, you know, Spike was the original one who kind of brought the UFC along for many years with Tough and that stuff. And And, you know, the UFC kind of, I don't want to say screwed him over, but they obviously left them for a different partnership, which left a void in Spike's programming. So I think they're that kind of stuck in the craw of Viacom and of Spike, and they kind of wanted to shove it up the UFC's butt for a while. So, you know, them helping build Bellator has been a big part of that. And obviously, yeah, Bellator's grown, like I said, by leaps and bounds, and they've acquired a lot of really good free agents. And, you know, the biggest winner in this is the fighters, because now that there's the more promotions you have competing for the best fighters, the better it is for the fighters, right? Because they're going to get a larger share of the purses, more lucrative contracts. So the big winner when a Bellator or a 1FC or someone to that extent succeeds is the fighters. So I don't want there to be one. I want there to be two or three or four major promotions, which are, you know, really trying to pay. Pay these fighters for their services.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that I struggle with is it kind of reminds me a little bit of boxing where, you know, who's the best fighter in the world? Well, we don't know because, you know, there's different federations, if you will, saying that their title's the best. You know, I mean,
yeah.
What? How do we overcome that? I mean,
well, I struggle with that as well. I think the thing with boxing, it's one of the problems is obviously in MMA. In boxing, I think it's also that there's too many weight classes, right? So there are a lot of there's the WBC, WBO, there's so IBF. There's so many different they're not even called, you know, their belt, they're the people that give out the belts, right? But then there's also weight classes like every 3 to 5 pounds.
Every 3 to 5 pounds.
It reminds me of the age group determining who's the best in age group wrestling. You know, you got Fargo, Iron Man, Disney, that tournament, you know, Flo Nationals, NHSCA Nationals. And I just get annoyed with making some inferred determination on who's the best. You got to lean on, like, Willie and CP to have them sift. You got to have them sift. But you do. I mean, they're not even an evil, but they're a necessary. They kind of calibrate the opinion of people, and so I don't like that. I mean, I'm glad that they provide that service because I'd rather have it than not to determine who the best is right now. But I don't like that you need to lean on that so much. It bothers me.
Sure.
And I think
I get that. I can answer this. I can answer this big league. And that is that I agree with you. Tommy, it's plagued my career. I wish there was a bracket. We'd go find out who number one is. But that just is not the case.
Right.
So, you know, most people don't even consider me top five when I'm the only one who's never lost. But, you know, when you look at it, that also builds anticipation, right? Because when there's more – and UFC was essentially a monopoly for a few years there, for 3 or 4 years. And so you kind of did know who the best was. But now that, again, you know, Bellator's gaining steam, ONE Championship's gaining steam, there's going to be more better fighters spread out across promotions. So the other thing that does is it adds intrigue, right? And, oh, what would happen if he fought him? Which, again, is good for the fighters because then people –
Yeah, The only reason
Mayweather-McGregor is making this much money is intrigue, right? That's it.
Yeah.
If we watch,
but they're making that money because it's going to happen. There's just no. It's intrigue with no climax or no crescendo.
That's not true. I mean, over the course of their career, most people would fight each other.
All right. So are you going to fight any of these UFC dudes?
Well, I'm the exception to the rule at this time. You know, at this time, but. For the most part, it has happened. And, well, I mean, the other thing, you know, if we go into – and if we want to get into the Ali Act, which is something that's being pushed by MMA supporters, is the exclusivity and the length of the MMA contracts is enormous, right? A lot of these contracts last 2, 3, 4 years. And so one of the things the Ali Act would do, it would reduce the length, the ability to have a lengthy exclusive contract, which would then obviously give people the ability to fight for more promotions and, to your point, face each other, right? So that's now we're getting into all the problems in MMA, but one of the big ones for fighters is these coercive, lengthy exclusive contracts. I mean, that's a huge problem, and to your point, that's why some people don't fight each other. So, you know, if the Ali Act came into place also, that would help that cause. But yeah, I think I'm all about anything that helps the fighters. I'm gonna go ahead and cheer for. So I think Bellator gaining steam helps fighters. More promotions, being able to have more money helps fighters. I'm all for it.
Awesome.
So hey, I think you told me you're gonna get your buddy.
Got confirmation. Kyle Snyder's coming on next week, so we've got to get. You know, I apologize for kind of being in the intermittent communication here in the Outer Banks, but let's be dialed in and ready to attack Kyle with some good dialogue, man.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm gonna go straight Mad Dog interviewer on him, Tommy.
I think we should Mad Dog Sadulayev right out of the gates.
Okay, well we can do that, but I want to interview him. I want to go sports psych on him because. He was supposed to go to dinner with me when we had him in for the camp, and then he ended up taking off on that flight. And I got to, we talked for, an hour between a couple of the drives, and then he was doing the camp. But I really want to talk to him more about, it almost seems to me, and I didn't get really deep, but he didn't really have any struggles coming up, but struggles make you strong. So he had to have some kind of struggles, right? But it seemed like he kind of almost seamlessly transitioned into the superstar he is. But that's almost never the case. So I'm kind of excited to ask him a few more questions on that topic.
Okay. And I'm down with that. And I think that is interesting. One point, though, since we got a little bit of time before we got to cut out of here. People always say, this guy never had any true failure, or he never had any true adversity in his life outside of wrestling. How is he successful? And they say that about people other than Kyle Snyder.
Sure.
And I've always answered that with, that might be true, but it's the frame of reference that the person has that allows them to feel like they're struggling or not, or like they're dealing with adversity or not. So when you're a freshman in high school and you get second in the state and lose in double overtime, 99.9% of the population is going to say you should be so happy. But if that individual's frame of reference is I failed at the doorstep of my dream,
sure.
then that's all he really needs mentally to develop, overcoming failure and dealing with adversity, and all those things. And same thing with, you don't need to grow up in the streets of Shaolin to feel like you had it rough. It's all about frame of reference to me. Cause I've had this conversation a lot. Didn't see that coming, but what do you think of that?
No, I agree. And actually I just listened to a fantastic podcast, which, kind of described this topic, it was Joe Rogan and this guy named Jocko Willink, his former Navy SEAL. They were talking about how a lot of people don't have struggle in their lives anymore. And obviously, as Americans, we don't really have real struggle, right? Where we're hunting, gathering our food, right? And we got to go kill something to eat for real.
Yeah, I mean, our poor people are fat and have cable.
Yeah, so, we're not in that struggle, but they were talking about they're jiu-jitsu guys, right? So he was talking about creating struggle through that. Or, Joe was talking about trail running and, creating struggle, making stuff tough on yourself, because we as humans lived so many years where we were struggling every single day of our existence, right? In the 1400s, 1500s, all those years, we were struggling. There's very few people that were living easy at those points in times. And how that's kind of so ingrained to us, and how we need that struggle to feel fulfilled. And I thought that was kind of fascinating. So that's kind of to your point is that, maybe second state of freshman is not a real failure, but to him it was, right?
Yeah.
Not a real struggle, but it is a struggle.
I think that we're going to hear that out of him. He's going to be like, hey, yeah, no, I grew up in freaking, middle class America on the Eastern Seaboard outside of Washington, D.C., I had great parents, support system, and stuff like this, but this happened to me in my life, and when it happened, it really changed the way that I looked at things, and it's going to be like this example that it's like, really? That really is what drove you to be an Olympic champion, and I think people struggle with that, but to me, it's like, it's all about the mental frame of reference. How did that person – it was important to them, or it hurt them, or it's something that affected them. And they used it as fuel to be something different. And anyways, we're kind of killing the next episode, but I feel like that's what we're going to hear out of Kyle, because I know his upbringing is he wanted for nothing when he was brought up.
Sure. So all right. So we will. We'll discuss that with Kyle. Last thought, Tommy. I finally finished the book I was reading. It was long. It was difficult. And I will be starting the book Grit tonight.
It's a good one, man. You're going to like it. You know, I don't think you'll mind it, but, you know, it's, you know, if you read the unabridged version and not like the Cliff Notes version, which I read the unabridged version, it dives deep into the science of, you know, the psychology of grit in all aspects of life. But they use youth sports so much as an example of grit. Nice. That I'm excited for you to read it, and then we can kind of expand on it.
I hope I did not get the unabridged version. If I did, I did not mean to.
You probably didn't. You probably didn't. The unabridged version is like 25 pages.
Oh, definitely did not get that then. Like 300
pages. I'm sorry. The abridged version is 25 pages. Unabridged, yeah, it's like 300.
Okay, got it. Nice. All right, Tommy, you have a good night, and I will talk to you later.
Later, man.
See ya. You are listening to the T. Rowan Funky Show, and it is brought to you by Defense Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had, if you know me, you know I've had ringworm issues for a long time. So I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American in Virginia. So these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.